Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
For those of you who don't know me, but I think everybody does, I'm Paul Cohen. Welcome to tonight's study of the Jews for Jesus ministry. And tonight we'll be looking at Abraham, the man of faith. And this is part one of a two-part study. I do want to read Genesis 12, verses 4 to 13, or chapter 13, verse 14. So the study is based on those verses. It's quite a lengthy passage, isn't it? But the passage does give us a very interesting thing. You see that God's promises are there, even though Abraham makes an enormous mistake by leaving the land, going to Egypt, lying, and then coming back. So what I want to do is basically look at the walk of faith, not so much of Abraham, but I use Abraham as an example, and then look on to our own lives. So with that in mind, that's basically the study that I have assigned here. So it's not just an introduction of an account of somebody who walked in the land, but it's a story, a picture of principles and struggles of the walk by faith, just as our walk of faith has those same struggles. We can apply that to our own lives. We start with Abraham in the land, yet he's still learning the conditions of the land, in the land of promise. In a sense, he stands in the same place as any believer in Yeshua, Jesus, who is now walking with God but has not learned to walk in faith yet. Paul calls this in Galatians chapter 5 to walk by the Spirit. Let's look at that verse in Galatians 5. Abraham was commanded to live in the land, and yet when there was a famine, he chose not to live in the land and to step out of the land. At that point, he chose to go out and live not by the Spirit but by the flesh, by his own choice, by his own desires. So he steps out and he goes to Egypt. What happens in Egypt? Well, he lies to Pharaoh. He's greatly blessed, but the blessing turns out to be not such a big blessing after all. That might be the same for us often. In my own experience, I can say that it's not. If we walk by the Spirit, we should walk by the Spirit. When we walk by the flesh and do the things that are not of God, we often come back with trouble in our own life. Just as a side little note, I made a little point on the source of strength, because the words that became quite interesting when I did this study. And Abraham passed through the land onto the place of Shechem, onto the terebinth of Moreh, or onto the oak of Moreh. Depending on your translation, it'll say the oak or the terebinth or the holy tree, or the King James has the plain, but it's the only version that has plain. Anyway, Shechem comes from the root word for strength. Moreh comes from the word instruction or teacher, and the terebinth, or the in Hebrew alon, provides shade or rest. So when you put them together, it actually becomes quite an interesting thing, because Abraham finds rest under this tree, under this sacred tree, because he does what? He comes back to God. He meditates on what God has done for him. Now, there's a whole lot of little references there in between, like Isaiah chapter 1, 29, Isaiah 57, verse 8. And a lot of them talk about places where they meet God or they meditate on the Word. It's something that we need to do, something that we need to become aware of. If we walk by the Spirit, how do we do that? In the Old Testament times, you see that they often go to the tree and they meditate underneath it. In front of the New Testament, the example is with Nathanael. And he meditates underneath the fig tree. And he meditates on the word, and he meets Yeshua, and Yeshua says to him, I saw you sitting under the fig tree. And Nathanael responds, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. Now, it's a bit of a strange comment if you don't know what Jesus is already saying to him and what he's saying. It's the same here, like, how do we respond to God, and how do we meditate on God? Abraham came back out of the land and he meditated. So what do? Do you take quiet times with the Lord? Do you take time to sit down with God and say, okay, here's your word, let's read a passage or a psalm and just meditate on what it says? It's something that we need to do. We need to come back to God. Don't make going to fellowship on a Wednesday or on a Sunday the only way out to God. It's something we need to live. And by meditating upon Him, about what He has done for us, what Abraham was promised, for instance, he could meditate on that. It's something we need to try to do. Think about what God has told us to do, and then say, how do we do that? How do we apply that in our lives? God has called us. He's chosen us. what does that mean to us? And just let him speak to us at that point. I think that that's what I see in that verse in particular, because Abraham finds strength in the teachings of God, and he finds rest. Just as we should find rest in the Word. Now, in John, we know that the Word is Yeshua, Jesus. I don't know if you, whether you're a believer or not, but Yeshua said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. I am meek and lowly of heart. You will find rest for your souls." How do we meditate on that? What does that mean to us? Abram had a promise, and God said to him, "Get up out of your land and go to this land, and I'll bless you." Hard time comes. He gets out and he comes back, right? And so he gets discouraged. So what about us? God has spoken to us through the prophets, through the fathers, through the New Testamental prophets, through the Messiah himself. So how do we deal with that in our lives?
We should take notice.
We should think about these things that he's said and the reasons why he says them. And what do they mean in our lives? Where do we go with that? Because it's not just a telephone book that we're reading. It's not just information. But it's a life application book. God has sent us, well, it's much more than a life application book. But it's something that we need to live. It's not just something that we can study. Both in Abraham's and in our own life, we see a life of conflict. Now it says the Canaanites were then in the land. While the land was promised to Abraham, we see that there are struggles within the life of Abraham, within the land, that he has to deal with. It's not just between him and the lies that he made with Pharaoh, and it's not just between him and his nephew Lot, but it's also with dwelling in the land, with living by faith, saying to God, "I will trust you for the land that you provided," whatever that means. Even though he didn't own a single piece of land until Sarah died, he still lives in it most of the time, from the moment he's called. The Canaanites were pagan tribes that hounded and afflicted Israel from Abraham till much, much later. But they're a picture of evils and problems in our own life, and we've got to wrestle against them. Can somebody look up Galatians chapter 5? In this verse, we see both external and internal conflicts. Galatians chapter 5, verse 17. Abram struggled with the land. We struggle with our own flesh. We want to do the things that we want to do, but we shouldn't do them because they're opposing the flesh. A classic example would be, for instance, on the internet. While the internet can be great, there's also lots of stuff on it that is utterly unhelpful and utterly useless. Or TV. Sometimes watching TV is a great thing, and sometimes it's a thing that we shouldn't be watching because it's an inappropriate program. If Jesus would come and sit next to you, would you still be watching the same program or watching the same internet page? Now, I know, but for myself, sometimes I know I shouldn't be watching those movies, you know. And it's something that we need to struggle with. It's a struggle that we have in our own lives. Or, for instance, instead of doing the right thing, I think, I'm tired, tomorrow. And it's something that we need to struggle with. This is a negative example, but it's also positive examples in terms of when we do the right thing, even though there's no instant reward, but do them because it's the right thing to do. And we have standards and morals, and our ethics are upheld. Can somebody read Galatians 5, 24 to 25? So they're the next couple of verses, verses 24 and 25. Abraham was promised the land, but he had the struggles there within. We have the struggles within, but Paul writes here that we've been crucified. Yet how often do we really take up the old flesh again and say, "That's all right, it'll be okay"? It's something we need to struggle with on a daily basis. It's not something that we do once. Pick up your cross and follow me is a daily thing. That's what Paul is saying here, I believe. We need to daily nail the old self to the cross. It's something that none of us like. We all like the power thing. We all like the glory thing, the happy thing, the quick thing, the instant coffee thing. When it comes to the struggle, we don't like the struggle. And look, I'm no different. Instant coffee? I don't think so. But all the other things, like, yeah, let's be honest, I want an easy life. But it's something that doesn't work. Yeshua came from heaven to lay down his life. Now, what he set aside is so much more than what we have to put aside. Now, for us, it's a continual battle. in terms that it's our own nature. It's the old flesh. It's something we need to crucify. There's another passage in Ephesians chapter 6. Now Ephesians 6 is a little bit more heavy in terms that it's not the flesh and the carnal side of it, but it's the spiritual side of it. And I think we fight them at the same time. Abraham going to Egypt and lying was his own self-doing. But fighting the Canaanites is an external thing. God had left them in the land to fight against them. That's the same for us. We have our own flesh to deal with and to struggle against and to make sure that it's crucified and live by the Spirit and walk by faith. But we also have a spiritual side. And that's explained in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 to 17. So there are two things that we battle with. We battle in the heavenly realms. And Paul writes here, this is the solution how to do that. And he gives clear instructions. But he also says we battle the flesh. And so it's a twofold struggle that we deal with. And they're both struggles that we need to take on and be aware of. It's not one or the other. Often we say, oh, the devil made me do it. Well, no. Sometimes we just say, it's all right. It's the flesh that's weak. But it's something we need to struggle with on a daily basis and say, is this me? Am I fighting myself here? Or am I fighting the external enemy, the devil himself? And if it's the flesh, I need to deal with it by saying, hey, I'm crucified. I am crucified. And I am crucifying this to the Lord and letting it die. While saying to the devil, I crucify, you're going to die, it's not going to work, because that's not going to happen. We need to crucify ourselves in terms that we need to die to the things that are of the flesh. And it's much harder. But together, it makes a full picture. Why would we want to do that? Because we need a life of constant cleansing. The first thing that Abraham does when he comes back to the land is do what? Abraham built an altar to the Lord. And why does he do that? Cleansing. You see, if we're not clean, God is not going to listen. The first thing you see about the whole book of Leviticus that drips out is cleansing, holiness. If we want to stand strong against the enemy, we've got to live a holy life. Now, common sense alone is not going to do it. We need to have holy common sense. And we'll go a long way. Common sense on how to fight the devil and common sense on how to fight the flesh. But if we stand clean by not looking at certain movies, I mean, I'm just using it as an example, but you can fill in your own example what is pertinent in your life. Or looking at certain pages on the websites, and you can say, hey, I can stand this because I've been redeemed, I'm clean. The crucifying of our flesh has a cleansing effect. By saying no to certain things, we become stronger. We lay them before the Lord and say, Lord, this belongs to you now. Abraham built an altar to the Lord, and the Lord appeared unto him there. An altar is first a place of cleansing, and after the cleansing it provides a basis of worship, relationship, and fellowship, and service to God. If we're not clean, God won't hear our prayers. If we're impure, nothing will come through to God. God hates sin. It's a stench to him. Just as every time we drive past a garbage truck, we go, oh, God, or somebody does some fresh manure on their gardens, we walk past and we go, oh, that stinks. Well, it's the same in our lives. Like, we need to cleanse them. Now, for us, cleansing is different than Abraham. Abraham built an altar and he sacrificed an animal on it. Well, usually when we go to fellowship, we don't bring a goat, which is probably a good thing, but it is something that we still need to remember, that Abraham did bring that. Moses did bring that. All the priests did bring that. So what did we bring to the Lord? Well, one sacrifice has been made, Yeshua, and he has cleansed us from all our sin. But does that give us the right to sin all the more? No, it doesn't. We should stay absolutely not, because while we have been cleansed, we need to then live holy lives. And that's what Abraham demonstrates here. A holy life, and then the Lord meets him. A cleansing, and this time for fellowship with the Lord. If we live clean lives, God will meet us. As pilgrims in this land, before we meet the Lord, we also need the cleansing of the blood. The cross of Messiah was there to judge and crucify the self, so that with boldness we can enjoy the relationship with the Messiah. The walk of faith must be a continual cleansing by the cross of Messiah and our own crucified life. The altar is then a place of self-judgment where true worship and God's power can be found. Let's look at some of these verses. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 to 24. He calls us to do two things: live a holy life and do right things. They come together, right? Abraham does what? He puts up the sacrifice, the altar, meets God, and he does the right thing after that. He says to God, let's meet, let's have fellowship. When you look at these verses in Hebrew in particular, what do you see? Does anything stand out? Look at verse 19. What is the basis of us meeting God?
Righteousness.
Okay. So, verse 19 says we have confidence of entering, right? Remember that Zechariah, John's father, went into the temple and he saw an angel? What was his reaction? An angel appears to him and he quakes in his boots. To put it in a modern translation, he's afraid. Usually when you meet a messenger of God, or when you meet God himself, that would be an awesome experience. It would be like, I have no idea, because I think that I have never experienced such a closeness. But Zechariah was in the temple ministering, and an angel appeared, and he was afraid. He was very afraid. This verse says that with boldness we can enter. Now there's a story, whether true or not, I'm not to debate that, that the priest used to have a rope around their leg. So when they went into the holy place, that if God would strike them, that they could be pulled out. Now whether that's true or not, I'm not here to debate that. But it does show you that there was an enormous fear of meeting God. But this verse says that with boldness we can come before God. How did we obtain that boldness? Through the blood of Jesus. Because he shed his blood, we can now enter into God's presence, unrestricted. But he was holy, and he's our sacrifice. So if we are unholy and God doesn't hear our prayers, would we still have that confidence? They need to go hand in hand. He is holy, and so he commands us to be holy. It's something that we need to develop in our lives, holiness, so we can go on beyond that, meet God and speak to God. It's something that we need to develop in our own lives, the life of continual change. And I'm using the Authorized Version, which is slightly different than the New American, but he removed from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel. Now Bethel means the house of God, and he pitched his tent there, having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar unto the Lord, and he called upon the name of the Lord. Abraham never stopped for very long. Authors, can you look up Hebrews 11, verses 8 to 11? The walk by faith is to walk by the Spirit. Every day new steps and new lessons. God leads us and sometimes drives us to a place where we can achieve some victory, overcome some habits, and take new steps by faith. What we see is that Abraham is a pilgrim. He goes from place to place. He doesn't know how much of the land or where the land is. He just goes. God calls him up Ur of the Chaldees and he says, go. Goes to Aram and then goes to the land of Israel. Here we see a part of that promise being fulfilled. He comes back and he goes to Bethel on the west and I on the east, builds this altar, and he is an alien, much like we are aliens. If we belong to Yeshua, to Jesus, we also belong in heavenly places. We belong with the Lord. So in a sense we are aliens and residents here, temporary residents, until the Lord calls us home to our eternal home, which is quite different than this one. Some of the same struggles that we have today will not apply in our lives. It's probably a good thing. But he lived by faith, and it says that Abraham looked for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Earlier I mentioned meditation. Abraham, while he was promised only a land, he looked forwards to a city, it says, which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Now, Abraham wasn't promised that, as far as we are aware of the text in Genesis. Hebrews explains that a bit further, and he says he's looking beyond that. He's looking towards the city of God. What do we look for in our lives? Do we look forward to the city of God? To the place where God will dwell in the midst? Yesterday I was watching a TV show and somebody was asked the question, who would you like to meet? Any person in history? And the answer was, well, Einstein or maybe Jesus. But what do you look forward to? Who do you want to meet? Who do you want to see? What do you want to see? Abraham wants to see that city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. That's where he wants to live. Where do you want to live? Who do you want to see? If you would live in that city that Abraham wanted to live, could you go there today?
I'll take your family with you.
You could take your family with you. It's not an issue. It's a one-way ride, though. It is by believing in Yeshua and saying, I'm going to crucify myself and struggle against my own flesh and move on and live in the land of promise, in the land of faith, and walk by faith, walk in the Spirit, by cleansing, by holiness. Let's go back to the text. A walk of faith is a life of continual progress, a never-ending journey. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 to chapter 5, verse 4 has quite a bit to say in it. Now we won't read all of it, but Gabby will read a few verses from it. We'll start verse 16. Remember, Abraham was promised a land, but he knew that would be temporary. He looked forward to a city that had foundations, and the architect and builder were God. He looked beyond the promise and said, I'm going to look for God. What does He have in store for me? Paul here writes the same thing. We don't lose heart. Now sometimes we do get discouraged when we realize that we don't live holy lives. When we've fallen short of the glory of God, we go, I shouldn't have done that. Or look at the mistake that was, or what it cost me. Abraham was made rich in Egypt, we read, because of Sarai, his wife. And what was he given? Lots of things. He was given camels and sheep camels and donkeys and a whole lot of things, but including maidservants. And one of them was Hagar. And she became the mother of Ishmael, the father of the Arabs. And that blessing turned out to be not such a blessing after all. Momentary light affliction might produce in us an eternal weight of glory far beyond any comparison. If Abraham would have said no and stuck to the truth, God still would have stepped in. God is not a God that leaves us dangling. He will call us at the right time with the promises that He's made to us. Abraham thought he would step in himself and help God out. Well, God doesn't need our help. We need to be faithful to God, not help God out. He's much bigger than us. We don't need to do that. But it's something that we can see here in these verses. We might get discouraged, but don't lose heart. Though the outer man, the flesh, should be decaying, yet our inner man, the man of spirit, the spiritual man, is being renewed day by day. How? In the morning we pray, or in the evening you pray, whenever that time comes, or you meditate on the word, or you sing psalms or songs to God. I think one of the things that we often forget is that we may get discouraged, and that's okay. It's okay to be discouraged. I'm sure that Moses and Elijah and a whole lot of people got discouraged. That's okay. How do we come back? We need to come back to God and believe what He has promised us. Remember that He has said, I will be with you. And it's something that we need to live by and remember. That we can enter with boldness into the holy place and come before God. We've got to live clean lives. It goes hand in hand. Well, if we can stand before Almighty God, what would we do? What should we do?
Worship
Him. Abraham built an altar and he worshipped. Often we go to church or congregation when we go to, and we sing and sit and sing and sit, and that's it, and then it's over. But it's something that we need to develop in our lives. We need to develop the singing of the songs of praise in terms of what the scriptures, in terms of singing the things that He's promised us. Now, it's interesting when we look back at Genesis, Bethel, the house of God, on the west, but Ai or Ai on the east. Now, Ai comes from the word of rubble. We either dwell with God or with the rubbish in our life. We either live the old life or dwell with God. It's something that we need to remember. The patriarchs, in particular, were tent dwellers. And tent dwellers hold material things quite loosely. But they're conscious of the fleeting and transitional values of what the world thinks are important. To them, there should be a discontentment in our own lives with what the world offers. We should hunger and thirst for doing what is right. Can you look up Matthew chapter 5 verse 6? The patriarchs lived in tents, fleeting. Whatever you can take in a tent, that's all you can take. We are also aliens in this land until the Lord calls us home to our permanent home. In that sense, what do we cling to? What do we hold on to? How much of our things is in collecting things that really have transitional value, but no value beyond that? Matthew chapter 5 verse 6 reads, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." The thing that we most crave in most of the movies that we see today is what? Power, money, some wealth, big boats, bigger houses, a whole lot of things that are really what? Is God going to give us an entry on how much money we have? No, the entry has already been paid. Does He accept us when we have more power or more academic standards or any of those kind of things? No. The entry fee has been paid. What does He want from us? That we search for righteousness, that we hunger after righteousness. It's something that we need to do in our lives.